Hey guys, this is Carly Perez, aka Katrina from Lucha Underground, and you're listening to Salad Monster Sounds Off.
It's business time, baby.
The Salad Monster Sounds Off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 440 of the Salad Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, May 15th, 2016. I am the Salad Monster. Hope everybody's having a great week, great weekend, which is almost over now, which sucks. Audible is still offering listeners of this podcast a trial of its service for 30 days. Use our link, audibletrial.com/Salad Monster. And a lot of you guys, I mentioned it was a little slow going there for the first few weeks of the month, but it kind of picked up this past week. A lot of people cashing in their Audible trial, taking advantage of it. You get one free audio book when you sign up. It could be any of the titles they offer. They've got over 180,000 of them. A lot of them are wrestling related. Some of them are narrated by the wrestlers themselves. So pop it in, audibletrial.com/Salad Monster. You sign up, you try it out. If you don't like it for any reason, you can cancel within 30 days. You won't get billed, and you get to keep your free audio book. So you could support the show that way. Of course, you could always buy a shirt in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/Salad Monster Sounds Off. We have our brand new Sound Off Guy shirt up in the store right now. And there may be a female version on the way of the old Sound Off Guy shirt. We have a couple of them in there. And I've gotten some emails from some of our female listeners saying, hey, what about us? You know, we can get a Sound Off Girl shirt. That would be great. So there may be one on the way. Want to stay tuned for that. And if you like what you hear every week, you can make a PayPal donation on thesalamonster.com. The PayPal box is on the right-hand side. If you want to get a shout-out on the show, if you want to show your support for the podcast, $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and the aforementioned shout-out. We have a bunch of them here now. I want to say thank you to Chuck Lunatic Lentz, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera. That's our trio of terror right there. Some of our most frequent donators. Bearclaw Wendell Baugh. Rodney Hot Rod Cologne, who wants to give a shout out to his wife Anna, as well as to Herb, Danny, and Bruce. The Chosen Son, Andre Smith. The Irish Assassin, Connor Grennan. Soldier of Fortune, Umer Khan. Payback, Tejas Bagwat. Braggadocious, Brandy Carter. Martin the Mailman Grunberg. He always delivers. That's kind of the whole point of the mailman thing. And Pull No Punches, Alan Ragasa of SelectiveHearing.com. They cover music and pop culture. Check them out, Selective-Hearing.com. So thank you to everybody who made a donation. I very much appreciate it. And I have to take a moment here to promote the interview that I did this past week with Carly Perez, better known as Katrina, from Lucha Underground. Is very excited about this. We got the chance to interview her. We spoke for about 25 minutes. The entire interview, the full thing, is up on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesalamonster. It is a YouTube exclusive. Although if you go to the video, again, as I mentioned before, in the video description, there is a link if you want to download the MP3, put it on your phone, listen to it on the go. It was a great interview. She's a really sweet girl. And you'll learn something, too, because I was talking to her not only about Lucha Underground, but about her days as Maxine in WWE and working with Dusty Rhodes. There was a story in there about some heat with Oksana. Not so much with Oksana herself, but something really fucked up, quite frankly, that happened. An idea that she pitched that they stole and gave to Oksana. It's an interesting story, especially when you hear her tell it herself. So go on the YouTube channel and check it out. You know, some people think that when I made that comment last week during the Lucha Underground review, I was just reviewing the show and I made a random comment about how, you know, damn, I got to get Katrina on the show. And people were like, you know, after the fact, they were like, oh, okay, now we know where that comment came from. I swear to you, I made the comment, people picked up on it. There were a couple of people who tweeted her and said, hey, you know, you should come on the show. And she was game. And I took over from there. This was not something that was already done or scheduled in advance. It came together within 48 hours. It's the power of the internet, man. I'm telling you, the power of social media. That's how it works. Now we got to see who else we can get on the show. But anyway, go there and check it out. It was one of the more fun interviews that I've done. I think you'll enjoy it. It's up on the YouTube channel right now. And also, real quick, I wanted to mention this. I watched the timeline history of WCW 1997 with Kevin Nash that Kayfabe Commentaries put out. You can say a lot of things about Kevin Nash. I have, a lot of people have. The man is a great storyteller. And he's very funny. I mean, I think most people know that. He's a witty guy. Very funny. Whenever I see that they have a new shoot interview with Kevin Nash, I always watch it. I always am entertained. I enjoy, you know, the stories and his way of telling it. This one was no different. He's really good in this one. This was over 3 hours long, and it never dragged. It was never boring. So basically the exact opposite of Raw. Sean Oliver, I got to give him props too. Sean Oliver, I think, is great in these things whenever he does like the U shoots and that kind of thing, the timelines. The biggest takeaway that I got from this is how much Kevin Nash absolutely hates Lisa Wolf. Yeah, actually, you know, hate isn't even a strong enough word to describe Nash's feelings for this woman. He despises her. Absolutely despise. I've never heard of her before. You know, she's a name from WWF in the mid-90s. I guess they hired her away from ESPN to be, I think she was an executive. I don't even think she was an announcer. I think she was an executive, you know, third or fourth down maybe on the food chain underneath Vince and maybe Linda and maybe one or two other people. You know, Jim Ross maybe. But this woman, Lisa Wolf, they brought her in. It was about, I think, 1995 maybe when they brought her in. And Diesel was on top as the champion. So he had to, you know, work with this woman. And again, she came in from the NFL, had no prior wrestling knowledge, and was treating it almost like it was the NFL. And she, I guess she just said certain things and pitched certain things to Nash. And he just, I guess he took it as a sign of disrespect or that this woman had no fucking idea what she was talking about. But boy. And it's weird too, because you might be asking, well, why would he be talking about Lisa Wolf, you know, from WWF in 1995 if this is a WCW shoot from 1997? Because he hates her fucking guts and takes every opportunity to bury her. That's why. I mean, seriously, he mentions her no less than like half a dozen times throughout the entire video. It's hilarious. It really is. So anyway, he explains why. He goes into more detail about why he's not fond of this Lisa Wolf woman. I don't even know what she looks like. I just never heard of her before. So that was the thing that stood out to me the most. But there's a lot of good stuff in there. A lot of stories, a lot of you know, dysfunction, as you might imagine. Talk about the spring break shows and all that. So whatever you may think of Kevin Nash, if you're looking to kill some time and to hear some cool stories from back then during the Monday Night Wars period, and he was right in the thick of it, you know, he was one of the biggest stars of that era. This is a very entertaining shoot. Let's talk about Adam Rose. Adam Rose, his name has been in the news a bit recently. He was popped for a second wellness violation a few weeks ago, him and Connor of the Ascension. And so he was handed down a 60-day suspension since it was his second violation. He came out in his own defense on his Twitter account and said he did nothing wrong. He was on Adderall for ADHD. I guess he was diagnosed as an adult, you know, in the not too distant past. It must have been a fairly recent thing. He claims WWE was well aware of it. He made the company aware of it over a year ago, and he was going to produce a doctor's note in his defense. I mean, he wrote this impassioned letter about how this might be career suicide, but I have to stand up for myself. I mean, very believable and very much, you know, rooting for the guy and hoping that things worked out for him. And what a difference a week or two can make, because Adam Rose was arrested early Wednesday morning, 1:30 in the morning. He was arrested, charged with domestic battery against his wife, which is a misdemeanor, and tampering with a witness, which also happened to be his wife, which is considered a felony. Which sounds really fucked up on the surface when you think about it, that the battery is a misdemeanor, the tampering with a witness is a felony. Seems backwards to me. So he was booked, and TMZ leaked video of him before the judge in the orange jumpsuit, and his wife was in court pleading in his defense, please. Because the judge was ready to rule that he was not allowed to have contact with his wife and was not allowed back in the home until either the next court appearance or until the case was settled. I mean, that could be months. And she pleaded and made the case that they have a special needs child, which they do. They have a son with special needs. If you saw the ESPN documentary on him a year ago, it was exactly 1 year ago this month that that thing aired on ESPN. You know his story. And so she was arguing in his defense, and there were no bruises on me. It was all just a misunderstanding. The cops, of course, I mean, you hear this time and time again. And the judge ruled, okay, you know, we'll allow him to stay in the home, provided that this is amazing. So the judge ordered him, in lieu of, I guess, either being held or just not being allowed in the home, to get counseling from his pastor. Because his wife had mentioned that, you know, he's been going through a rough time and he's been getting counseling from his pastor, I think, weekly for the last couple of months. So he has to continue getting counseling from his pastor and prove that he's going. So whether that means the pastor has to write a letter, the pastor maybe has to come to court to testify, whatever the case may be, that's his punishment for now. I guess the next court date's going to be in late June. So that's where things stand. The thing that came out in all this, I mean, this sounds really bad, but what really makes this completely fucked up is that there was apparently a prior, I guess, a battery charge. There was an incident, a domestic violence incident that took place in March that nobody knew about. I assume WWE didn't know. I would have to think if WWE was made aware of the fact that there was a domestic violence case involving one of its talents, you got to think at some point that's going to come out. They would have acted, you know, we don't take this lightly and that whole thing. So it sounds like nobody knew except Adam Rose and his wife. So that came out. This is not the first time. You know, even if it was the first time, it would be fucked up. The fact that this is the second time, apparently, that he's put his hands on his wife, this guy is toast. I don't see how he recovers from this. WWE indefinitely suspended him. He was already suspended. Now he's indefinitely suspended. I assume there's some kind of legal reason or whatnot that they didn't just outright fire him, but I assume that's what's coming. They may wait until the case is resolved, but whether it's now, 2 months from now, I think we've seen the end of Adam Rose in WWE. I think that's safe to say. But yeah, apparently all he has to do is speak to his pastor for the time being. You know, maybe the pastor has a three strikes and you're out rule, right? Literally, three strikes. It's incredible that that something like that went unreported. I mean, I guess if it was just an incident between the two of them and, you know, whatever happened. Apparently this time he grabbed his wife's head. He didn't, like, you know, hit her with an open hand or something, but he, like, violently grabbed her head and was yelling at her. And when she went to call the cops, he grabbed the phone away from her. That's where the tampering charge comes in. The whole situation is messed up. Jim Ross, you know, in his blog, he made a very interesting point, which is that if Adam Rose does get fired, and I don't know if this is also part of the consideration why they didn't fire him and instead they just suspended the guy, but if he were to lose his job, he could be in jeopardy of being deported because he's, you know, he's from South Africa. That's where he was born. I assume that he's here on a work visa. That work visa would specifically be for him, I guess, you know, working for WWE. If WWE cut him loose, I don't know how that whole process works. I don't know if he has a certain amount of time to find employment somewhere else before he'd be booted out of here. And again, he's got a wife and at least one, I think he has two kids, actually. So that's got to be a big consideration for him. The whole situation, I mean, if I'm WWE, I don't want to have anything to do with this guy. You know, this guy's already being a headache on the whole drug thing, which he may or may not be in the right for. All of a sudden, this comes up. To me, it's just a public relations nightmare that they don't need for a guy who's expendable. You know, they booked him into oblivion. He's part of the whole social outcast thing. He's a non-player in the company. You know, and it doesn't affect them in any way, shape, or form if they keep him or if they fire him. Although if they keep him, like I said, it's just an added headache for them. So, like I said, there's got to be some kind of reason why they didn't cut him loose right away. It's going to happen at some point. And it's a shame. You know, I remember that ESPN special when it aired a year ago, and I was one of the more vocal people arguing, what? Yeah, they got to capitalize on this. Do something with this guy. He was doing the Adam Rose thing, and that had kind of dried up or it wasn't really going anywhere. And they have this special where they take you behind the curtain and they take you into the world of what it's like to, you know, work for NXT. I guess that's really what it was. He was trying to get the character over in NXT. But they showed him in his home with his wife and his son, and, you know, he speaks, you know, when he speaks out of character, he doesn't have the accent. He sounds like a completely different person. He's not, you know, Adam Rose. He's Ray LaPon. And I just said to myself, there had to be a reason why WWE said, okay, we want this guy to be featured. I don't think it was ESPN that made the decision. I'm sure it was WWE that said, hey, you know, we'll pick this guy. This guy's got a compelling story, and we'll have him featured in this ESPN piece, and then it airs, and you don't do anything with the guy. I mean, to me, I look at that and I say, a situation like that, you gotta be ready to take advantage of that. People were you know, invested, like, emotionally in this guy's story, and they were tweeting him, you know, tweet after tweet after tweet, we're pulling for you, man, we hope that things work out for you, and WWE does something with you. And on his own Twitter, he started taking a poll, you know, should I bring back Leo Kruger? I was never a big fan of Leo Kruger in NXT. I thought he was fucking boring. I was a bigger fan of the Adam Rose character, at least when it started. I thought that was a lot of fun. But he was trying to get something going, and it's like the company just had other ideas. And I can understand it. It's like the Damian Sandow thing. If they don't see you as a money player, I can understand the mentality of, well, why are we going to waste our time coming up with all these ideas and getting behind this guy and giving him this quarter on the show and maybe even two segments on the show. But that doesn't mean you can't at least try to come up with something and see if it sticks. And if it takes off, then you know what? You may have a new star in your hands. You know, no harm, no foul. Otherwise, the guy's just, he's not doing anything. You may as well try. This was just a reason for them to try. I would have said the same thing if it was Damian Sandow, if it was Tyler Breeze, if it was anybody else in that position. You're featured in this ESPN piece. You get people to, like, rally behind you. It was just stupid for them to squander that. You know, the guy's maybe not going to be headlining against Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar, but, you know, he could have been a player. Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler is a player. Not much of one lately, but still. He's at least high enough on the food chain where, you know, he can make a difference. They've got him now with Baron Corbin, and I'm sure the reason for that is they feel, you know, Dolph's a great opponent for Baron Corbin, and he can give him great matches and make him look great, and, you know, it's great, right? At least he serves a purpose. A guy like an Adam Rose at this point, he doesn't serve any purpose. Bo Dallas, he doesn't serve any purpose. They're expendable. And maybe it goes back to the Ryback thing, where they make you expendable because they choose not to do anything with you, and of course then your value goes down. You become expendable, so the next round of cuts, maybe the axe falls on you, and now you're gone, and you're out of a job. And, you know, it sucks for them, but I just couldn't understand, you know, this guy gets that kind of mainstream media exposure. How are you not ready to just jump all over that and capitalize on that and just try to do something? I mean, look, if it fails, it fails. You gave the guy a shot. He you can put him in the list of one of many who had a shot, there was an opening in there maybe to do something, and they just were too slow, or they just didn't take advantage of it. But, you know, I look back on this now, and of course, it's all a moot point. You know, he doesn't have much of a future in the company now. Who knows if one led to the other? What the hell's going on in their life? You know, did he, was he under a lot of pressure and stress? Was he upset with them not doing anything with him? Did it have nothing at all to do with his job? Maybe it had to do with other family pressures. We don't know. We don't know cause and effect, what, you know, one thing led to the other. That's how I felt a year ago. Now I feel very differently in light of all these, in light of these charges, obviously. And I just think it's just a matter of time before this guy's gone, as well he should be. Because, frankly, I don't know that you really want somebody like that on your roster. So that's I think, pretty much the end of Adam Rose. It's also the end of an era. The Brooklyn Brawler was quietly released. So quietly, I don't think they ever made mention of this on WWE.com. And, you know, I get that he's not an active performer. If he was an active performer, I assume they would have mentioned something. But still, I mean, he was a long time part of the company. He was a performer at one point. Not even worth a mention. They just let him go. After more than 30 years with WWE, the Brawler is no more. 1983 is when he first debuted for WWF. Is nothing sacred anymore? I mean, I guess I pretty much knew the answer to that after they released, what was his name, Mark Yeaton? Remember him? He was the timekeeper. Actually, he's probably more famous as the guy who would toss beers to Stone Cold at ringside. He had impeccable aim. He also spent 30 years with the company. And then they cut him with no explanation. I remember his wife went on Twitter on like a Twitter rant. I don't remember if she took down the tweets or not, but you know, just 30 years, no explanation, boom, you're gone. We don't need you anymore. I swear to God, if they release Howard Finkel, because supposedly there's more cuts coming, they're not done yet. They start releasing people like Brooklyn Brawler, okay, and guys like that, nobody is safe. Oh, I mean, yeah, John Cena is safe, and Roman Reigns is safe, but almost nobody else is safe. So, all of a sudden, my mind starts to think, hey, you know, Howard Finkel's in the back, and, you know, I don't know what he's up to these days, but that starts to get me thinking there. And I think if they did that, okay, if they end up cutting the Fink, we all gotta, like, storm Titan Tower, because we ain't gonna stand for that. That's stepping over the line here. Christian is another one who was quietly released from his performer contract last week. I guess this wouldn't affect him doing another season of the Edge and Christian show if he wanted to. Although, based on comments that Edge made, I think Edge did an interview with, I think it was WrestleZone TV a few weeks ago, and he may not want to do another season of the show. I mean, the guy was asking him, like, oh, what can we expect for season two? And he was basically like, he wasn't joking around either. He was basically saying, I don't know that there's going to be a season two. And that kind of, you know, caught the guy off guard. And he was explaining that he underestimated how much work it would be to not just star in the show and perform in it, but I guess they had to produce it. I guess WWE basically was so hands-off, which, by the way, anybody who's watched, especially any of the recent episodes of the Edge and Christian show, you know that Vince McMahon probably doesn't even watch any of this stuff. He's so hands-off, he has no idea what's going on, because there's no way that half the shit they do and say would get through if Vince was micromanaging it. So apparently they just took a hands-off, laissez-faire approach and said, okay, this is your show, you guys have to handle the workload. You know, I'm sure they have a few writers and apparently they're doing most of the work themselves, and he just underestimated how much work and how time-consuming it was going to be. And so it's not a lock. I'm sure WWE would be on board for it, but it's not a lock that there's going to be a second season of that show, which would be a shame, because I've really gotten to enjoy it. It's one of my favorite things on the network, probably after NXT. The first episode was shit, but everything ever since then, it's progressively gotten better and more entertaining, and I enjoy the cameos and the humor. It's on point. It's just something that you would never expect to see on a WWE show or a WWE network. I think it'll come back. I think at the end of the day, it will come back. But Edge is probably going to have to be convinced, or they're going to have to get a fucking producer. Give the guy a producer. Just make him happy. Just bring the show back. But back to Christian, though, this is kind of a big story, again, that's flown under the radar, and they didn't say anything about it on WWE.com. It happened very quietly last week, apparently. They had not used Christian in a long time. I don't think he's had a match on TV, probably in about 2 years. He had suffered, I think, a few concussions, and then after that last one, they wouldn't let him wrestle again. And it may well be a Daniel Bryan situation, or even an Edge situation, where they simply say, we are not going to clear you, we are not going to allow you to wrestle. I don't know that for sure, but like I said, I'm sure Christian would probably get back in the ring if it were his choice, and he hasn't wrestled in 2 years. So you tell me, you know, what does that tell you? But here's a guy, you know, one of the unsung heroes in that company. You know, again, I know he's not like a Stone Cold Steve Austin or a John Cena, but you know what? The guy was a hell of a performer. He was another one of those guys who could go in there and give you a great match. They used him in that role for ECW, on the ECW brand. That whole thing, they were going to bring him back in a big storyline with Jeff Hardy, and it leaked, and Vince freaked out and swerved everybody by putting him on ECW instead. So Christian kind of got screwed over there, but he was a guy that worked with Jack Swagger in his early formative years. He was a guy that worked with Ezekiel Jackson, probably gave Ezekiel Jackson the best matches of his career when he was the ECW champion. He was a guy you can use in that role, and even on the main roster. You know, he had a ton of great matches. That feud with Randy Orton in 2011 for the world title was my favorite thing of that entire year. I mean, those two had some classic matches that year. And a lot of people were very upset when they put the belt on Christian and they immediately took it off of him. But that just shows you, you know, the guy he's very well respected, and there's a lot of people out there that really like the guy. You know, wherever he falls in the totem pole, it's not even really relevant. I always thought before we found out that he was cut from his performer contract last week, that he never got a proper send-off. And he deserved that. Not like a Ric Flair retirement celebration necessarily, but something. You know, and he also was part of that Attitude Era and the whole Edge and Christian, Dudley's, Hardy's, that whole triangle. I mean, he had staked a big spot for himself in the history of that company. And if this is it for him, and apparently it is as a performer, then you know what? I think they ought to at least acknowledge that in some way. Don't just ignore it. Don't just sweep it under the rug. Well, you know, too much time has gone by now. It'd be kind of weird to go back and first now. No, it's not. You could put him on TV on Monday night. Tomorrow night, you could put him out there if you wanted to. Give him a microphone. You know? You could do whatever you want. In fact, I think the finale of the Edge and Christian show is tomorrow night, I think. Might be the last episode of the season. You know, hey, put him out there and maybe let him say a few words and use it as an opportunity to promote the final episode. I mean, there's a lot of things they could do. Hopefully at some point they will do something because he deserves at least that much. Through all of these releases, and again, there may be more to come, at least they've signed one big name to a new contract. WWE has re-signed Triple H. Whew! Yeah, I'm sure that must have been a very tense negotiation. Triple H has re-signed at WWE a new 3-year deal as a performer. This is not like him signing as an executive. As a talent, as an in-ring performer, he has re-signed a new 3-year deal with the company. Thank God they came to terms. I wonder if he demanded equal pay and that they pay for his hotels on the road. So, there you go. You get Triple H at least through WrestleMania 35. Also, a quick rumor killer here. And this was probably the biggest disappointment of the week, to be perfectly honest with you. There was a rumor going around that WWE's house show in Honolulu on June 29th will be airing live as a network special using the old WCW Bash at the Beach name. And the lineup looked incredible. It was John Cena against Shinsuke Nakamura. It was Brock Lesnar against Kevin Owens. Charlotte against Asuka. You could certainly argue, you know, why give away these matches on anything other than like a big pay-per-view. But it's all a moot point because it was just a rumor that somebody started online. I don't even think the official lineup has been announced for the house show. So it's possible that absolutely zero of these matches end up happening. I mean, maybe Asuka. I think Asuka's on that show, so maybe she'll do something with Charlotte. But Brock Lesnar isn't even on the show. And it's not scheduled to be a network special. So that puts that to rest. I know some people still thought that it was going to happen or that Cena and Nakamura was happening. Cena and Nakamura at this point is not happening because no matches have officially been announced. The whole thing was just one, you know, giant rumor. It was completely manufactured. I was actually a little worried there for Nakamura. I'm not going to lie. You know, when I read that John Cena was his opponent, my first thought was, uh-oh, hitting that wall a little too soon. You got to give it some time before you hit that brick wall. So it's probably for the better. They should bring back Bash at the Beach, though, in some way. Maybe as a network special. I endorse that idea. One more thing before we get to Raw. This week coming up, May 18th, to be exact, marks the 1-year anniversary of Kevin Owens and his main roster debut in WWE. And I just wanted to say a few words about that because I don't know that there have been very many people on that main roster that who have come up to the main roster that have been as important as Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens came up. He, in his first year so far, has pinned John Cena, which he did in his very first match, clean, as a whistle in the middle of the ring. He powerbombed Machine Gun Kelly off the Raw stage, which was one of the greatest moments of maybe all time. He won the Intercontinental Championship twice and has done as good a job as any at trying to make it mean something. I mean, this guy is obsessed in storyline with getting back the Intercontinental title. In fact, I was shocked a few weeks ago when he beat Sami Zayn. I guess it would have been at Payback. And he got on the mic and he was basically saying, all right, I'm done with this guy now. And now I'm setting my sights. And I thought he was going to say the WWE Championship because I think Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns could have a hell of a storyline and a hell of a match. Instead, he said the Intercontinental, and it was kind of disappointing at first, but then I thought to myself, you know, for all the complaining that I've done before, I mean, I'm not the only one, but I've talked about how much I wish they would make those titles mean something again. They kind of did with that U.S. title when they were doing the open challenge stuff with John Cena, and now the fucking thing is a joke with Kalisto. It's just a fucking joke. And the Intercontinental title, it's just kind of, you know, it's there. But here's a guy who, in storyline, is so obsessed with winning back the Intercontinental Championship. It means so much to him. He just cannot let it go, and he will do anything in his power to get it back. It's like the WWE title isn't even a consideration for him at this point. He just wants that Intercontinental belt back. And I said, that's actually pretty cool. That's actually pretty cool. I mean, how could I hate on that? At some point, I'm sure Kevin Owens will have his moment. He'll get a shot at the championship. I don't know if he'll win it. Maybe not this year. I think down the road at some point he will. But I don't know that I see him beating Roman Reigns. Let's say if they have a pay-per-view match in a few months. Believe me, Kevin Owens ain't beating Roman Reigns. But I thought that was actually a pretty cool thing that they did. And then, you know, he competed in his very first WrestleMania, which I'm sure was a cool moment for him. So you look at his first year in the company, I don't see how you can look at it as anything but a success. And I think there's bigger and better things for him in the future. I look at this guy's performance just in the last few weeks, and I had people telling me, I know you don't watch SmackDown, but man, Kevin Owens was on commentary again, and he knocked it out of the park. So I go out of my way to at least watch that segment. And again, probably the most entertaining thing I've seen all week. Kevin Owens on commentary. Look at him at Payback. That was the Kevin Owens show. He had probably the best match on the entire show with Sami Zayn, right? The two of them tumbled around for 20 minutes. They had a great match. Now, you know, people who didn't hear my rant on Russo last week are going to hear that. They're going to be very upset with me for saying that. It's a joke. But yeah, they had the best match on the show. I mean, that AJ and Roman, it could go either way. Two great matches, I thought, on that pay-per-view. As soon as the match ends, he gets on the mic. He's cutting a promo. He says, oh, okay, there's an Intercontinental title match coming up next. I think I'll sit down with Byron Saxon and JBL and Michael Cole. So he sits down, and what does he do? Steals the show. Anytime he browbeats Michael Cole or Byron Saxon on commentary is a good night. He's sitting there, he's got JBL's cowboy hat on. I mean, this guy, he's fucking gold. I don't care what you think about how he looks or how he dresses. Who gives a fuck? He can perform. He goes out there. He's entertaining as all hell. That's all I ask. All I ask is to be entertained. I want to be able to watch, you know, half an hour of a show and have it go by. It feels like not even 10 minutes went by. At the end of the day, that's really all I ask for. I don't want to sit there watching a show, looking at the clock, looking at my phone. Oh my God, this is still going on. They're still out there talking. He's a guy who can go out there and talk. He can do it. He can go out there and can play cards and probably still find a way to make it entertaining. So I hope that they see what they have in this guy, and I get the sense that they do. I think people just need to be a little more patient. I know there's some people who are upset that, you know, he's already not the champ or wrestling for the title, and he should be. Believe me, there's a lot of guys who should be doing things, you know, on TV right now that they're not, including a few who got cut last week. So I think we just got to be patient here, and I think in due time, you know, he'll be in that mix. He'll be in that top mix, because they wouldn't be giving him all of this television time if they didn't recognize the fact that, hey, you know, we got something with this guy. I knew that going back a year ago when he was still the NXT champion. Think back to when he was still the champion in NXT at the end of his run there. He was feuding with like five or six different people at once. He had something going with Sami Zayn. He had something going, I think, with Neville. He had something going with Finn Balor. Then he came up to the main roster. He had something going with John Cena. He was feuding with like all these different people at once. He had these different things going on. You know, that would not be happening if he was just some random scrub on the roster. So I think Kevin Owens has had a hell of a first year. Hopefully his second year will be even better. And I just wanted to take a moment to mention that because I thought it was worth mentioning. You know, we're coming up here on the one-year anniversary. I don't want to say that he's had the best first year anybody's ever had, because he hasn't. Yeah, you know, he certainly didn't have a better first year than Kurt Angle or Brock Lesnar. But not bad for a guy who I think a lot of people probably never thought would even make it to WWE. We know how Jim Cornette feels about him. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who feel the same way that Jim Cornette does. Or Vince Russo. We finally found consensus between Jim Cornette and Vince Russo. They're unified in who they don't like. They are not a fan of Kevin Owens. And Kevin Owens can take that and he can stick it up all their asses. Because he's had a hell of a first year. Monday Night Raw was live from Omaha, Nebraska this past Monday Night Raw. Instapoll, almost 1,700 votes. This is the first time in all the times, all the months now I've been doing this Raw Instapoll that this has happened. 50% thumbs up, 50% thumbs down. An even split right down the middle. 50-50, just like they're booking. I got tweets from people saying, you know, you need a thumbs in the middle option, or, you know, bring back the meh option, which I did like the meh option a few weeks ago. And of course, everybody voted for that, and that's why I don't like doing it. You know, there's a reason most of the time I don't do that. There is no thumbs in the middle. You know, it's because if I did, 10 times out of 10, people would just choose that option. Just like they would if you gave them that choice with this presidential election. We would end up with President Meh. Doesn't work that way. You may not like your choices, but you have to choose. Even if the choice is between Tweedledee and Tweedledum. It's a new era, everyone. If you didn't know, now you do. And we're going to keep telling you about it until you vomit. And then when you do vomit, we'll take a picture of it and we'll tweet it with the hashtag New Era. They should get New Era baseball hats to become the official sponsor of Raw. This thing will get over about as well as the Divas Revolution did. Remember how they wouldn't shut up about that for months? Them and their buzzwords. You know what pisses me off about this new era nonsense? They couldn't shut up about it for 3 hours, right? Yet it was this show they decided to book three or four distraction roll-ups. New era, my ass. Now, on the other hand, I have to thank them for helping me sell some shirts. It gave me an excuse to start promoting my no distraction roll-up shirt again. And also my Champs or Chump shirts. Three different champions were pinned on this show. Charlotte, Miz, and New Day. All beaten. So don't give me any of this new era crap. Chris Jericho had a highlight reel. He was interrupted by Colin Cassidy. He talked about what else? The new era. I actually thought Big Cass, he more than held his own here. He looked really good out there. I said on Twitter, you know, Enzo Amore, he needs to hurry back up as soon as possible before it's too late and Vince McMahon falls in love. It may already be too late. They made a main event of Jericho against Big Cass, which never actually took place. They bait and switched the main event on all of us after promoting the match for 2.5 hours, which I thought was horse shit. AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson are now collectively referred to as The Club. So they named them after a sandwich. Or a 50 Cent song, take your pick. People seem so bothered by the name. I don't get why. They went with something basic because in about a week, there probably isn't even going to be a club anymore. Or the club may have a different name with a different person in AJ's place. So why bother coming up with some elaborate new name, right? It doesn't bother me. Shouldn't bother you either. It's more important things on this show to be bothered about. Sami Zayn tumbled his way to the Intercontinental Championship match Judgment Day. What is this pay-per-view? Extreme Rules. Gives a fuck. He beat The Miz, so it'll be a four-way with Miz, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and Cesaro, which should be outstanding. Paige and Charlotte, they had a good match on this show. I enjoyed it, despite the distraction roll-up finish. Shane McMahon had barred Ric Flair from ringside before the match, but he came out anyway, because he's Ric Flair, he does what he wants. So Shane came out with a bunch of security guards to escort Flair to the back. You had to see this. They had him surrounded at ringside. He looked like someone's elderly uncle who had just escaped the old age home. So this distracted Charlotte, and Paige got the win, even though Natty is the one getting the title match at Extreme Rules. Speaking of Paige, I wasn't going to say anything, but since we had about, 1,500 threads about this in our Facebook group, which, by the way, what the fuck, people? But anyway, Paige and Alberto Del Rio have been dating since before WrestleMania. And it came out this week. There were pictures online that popped up of them posing. And these are pictures they, you know, very openly and clearly posed for. It wasn't like they were being snooped on. Like those paparazzi photos you see in Us Weekly. You know, they're at Disney World and they're posing for photos. It almost looked like Alberto had like a stroller or something. I don't know if he had kids with him or what. So they wanted it out there. I don't know if it was planted or what. I'm not convinced that it's even all legitimate. For all I know, this could be some total divas bullshit. Who the hell knows? And honestly, I don't even care. I don't see what the problem is. I saw some comments in there about how, oh my God, the age difference. Oh, you know, she's going to be 24 years old. He turns 39 next week. I looked up his birthday. He turns 39 next week. Yeah, I dated a 22-year-old when I was 28, and that didn't last very long. Okay, this is a way bigger age gap, but you know what? If he thinks he can handle it, more power to him. Not many people listening to this podcast, not many men. You know what? I'll throw women in there, too. I have a friend, his wife, she's in love with Paige. I think if she had the chance to do something, you know what? I'm not so sure she would turn that down either. But I bet you most people listening to this podcast would not turn down Paige if they had the chance. So don't sit there all high and mighty on your chair. Oh, you know, the age gap. You know what? I say, way to go, dude. Way to go. Whatever makes you happy. If he's not with his wife anymore, then who the hell cares? I mean, some of you make it sound like he's 89 years old. He's that 89-year-old guy that Anna Nicole Smith married when she was in her 20s. I mean, give me a break. Dana Brooke made her Raw debut attacking Becky Lynch backstage, which once again aligns her with Emma, this time on the main roster. They were already a pair on NXT before Emma got called up to the main roster. They were pretty good together, too. They were the ones, like, when Asuka debuted, right? They were the ones, the first kind of, not line of defense, the first, I don't know, the first obstacle, the first challenge that you would meet if you were a new woman on the roster. Like, you know, we run NXT, and if you're going to be here, you got to go through us. And, of course, Asuka just fucking went through them like a buzzsaw. But I enjoyed the act between Emma and Dana, and I think they'll be fine here on the main roster. And, you know, look, the longer it takes Bayley to get her main roster call up, the less of a chance they have to fuck it all up. So I'm in no rush to see Bayley on the main roster. I am not upset that Dana Brooke, who may be, not as good as Bayley, that she got the call up first. But they don't call people up based on their talent, okay? I think that much is patently obvious. They call you up because of the way you look or because, hey, you know, we have an idea for this guy. So let's, you know what, let's book a storyline so we can get this guy in the main roster. It's not about who the best wrestler is. I mean, if you don't know that by now, I don't know, you haven't been paying attention. So the longer that Bayley stays in NXT, like I said, you know, the less chance they have of fucking things up. And I say that because I think it would be fucked up to bring her up now and not have any real ideas for her. It's obvious they're not going to take the title off Charlotte for a while. Sasha's probably going to be the one to get it next. So, okay, hotshot, they call up Bayley to the main roster. What do you do with her? I mean, I came up with an idea to bring Bayley up that involves Stephanie McMahon and building to a WrestleMania match. WrestleMania's done, right? It's gone. Stephanie now, at least for now, it's almost like she's morphing into a babyface, although I'm sure in the end she'll end up turning on Shane. So you bring Bayley to the main roster. What do you do with her? Something meaningful. What do you do with Bayley? I don't see there being very many good ideas. Look at Sasha Banks. I mean, I love how Sasha Banks has basically become the Brock Lesnar of the women's division. She never loses, which is good, but she's barely ever on TV anymore. And when I say on TV, I mean, she may be on Main Event and Superstars. When I say TV, I mean Raw, because that's, let's be honest here, that's all that really matters. That's what matters to them, that's what matters to the fans. She's never on TV. I can't remember the last time she made an appearance on Raw. So, you know, maybe at SummerSlam, she'll beat Charlotte the way Brock Lesnar embarrassed John Cena at SummerSlam a few years ago. You know, they're following the blueprint. She's got the Brock Lesnar schedule. I'm sure she's in the back every week, but still, she never shows up. But, you know, I like, that's why I like my idea so much. That's why I pitched it. You save Bayley until the night after SummerSlam. Bayley, he's got at least one more match in her against Asuka. Maybe two. I don't think she's going to get the belt back. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Maybe she will. But, you know, let Sasha win the championship at SummerSlam, get a big win in Brooklyn, same place where she lost the NXT belt to Bayley, and the next night out comes Bayley. They're going to be in Brooklyn in that same building both nights. So you know for a fact that if Bayley debuts that night, her and Sasha go face-to-face in the ring, you're not going to get a dead crowd. You're going to get exactly the kind of crowd that you would want that moment to have. That's why I pitched it to do it then. Now, the thing is, they've got to be creative in how they keep them apart, because I wouldn't do the first match between them until WrestleMania next year in Orlando. I wouldn't rush that on the next pay-per-view. You gotta wait. You gotta build it up. I just want that visual first face to face moment between them. Then they kind of go their separate ways and they do their own thing until early next year. They meet again and they have a match. I don't want Bayley put on the main roster now because, well, Bayley is so much better than the rest of them. Who cares? You're only as good as the idea they have for you. They won't even put Sasha on TV because they probably don't want to beat her before SummerSlam. What the hell do you think they're going to do with Bayley? I don't even know what Vince McMahon is going to think of Bayley when he really has the chance, like, gets his hooks in her, and now he has a chance to actually put her in a storyline. I almost shudder to think what he's going to come up with for her. It worries me. So keep her away for now. Sin Cara pin Rusev with what else? A distraction roll-up when Kalisto got involved. Why you would even have Rusev, you know, even in this circumstance, be pinned by fucking Sin Cara? I mean, I guess they did it so they could book a rematch on SmackDown. You know, good old Even Steven showed up on SmackDown. Rusev got his win back. Hooray for the new era! The Shining Travel Agents of the Caribbean will finally make their debut this Monday. Roman Reigns and the Usos, who now call themselves The Family, against The Club in an elimination match. Put it this way. You had three Samoans against a sandwich. Who do you think won that battle? The Family won, of course, by DQ. Came down to Roman Reigns and AJ. Really heated. People were into it. This was the best thing on the entire show. Reigns and AJ had a stare down after the match that had the crowd buzzing. I mean, this was great stuff. There was a chair laying in the ring between them. Neither guy wanted to pick it up and use it. They were kind of waiting for the other guy to make a move. And finally, they're playing cat and mouse. And finally, AJ does a springboard, Roman ducks. And as soon as AJ hit the mat, he immediately rolled out to the floor. And they continued their stare down. And people booed because they wanted to see those two go at it. You know, they weren't booing Roman. They were booing the fact that, hey, we want to see these guys fight. This was really the best night I felt for Roman Reigns in a long time. He still got booed, but there were a lot of cheers for him, too. It wasn't, 90-10 or 80-20 or even 70-30. I mean, it was, I would say, if anything, it was more maybe 60-40. I mean, it was a lot closer than it has been any other week that I can remember recently. Even chance of Roman at one point. You know, they had dueling Let's Go AJ, Let's Go Roman chants. You know, and I look at this and I say it's no coincidence that they gave us ass-kicking Roman Reigns a few weeks ago. Right? I forget which show it was. Maybe it was a week or two ago, which I liked, and I praised it because that's the Roman Reigns that we really should be seeing more of, right? So we got that a week or two ago, and at least for this week, he seemed to have more support than usual. That's not a coincidence. And now they're in Flair country tomorrow. They're going to be in the Carolinas. So we'll see how it goes. The last thing here, the Jericho Big Cass match, it never got started because Dean Ambrose attacked Jericho. He stole his $15,000 light bright jacket and destroyed it. They really made a mistake by not swapping this out with the elimination match. And the elimination match, by all rights, should have been the main event. You know, it's got your big guns in there. You're building to that main event on the next pay-per-view. You had a moment that the fans were into. It would have been a great visual to see them having a stare down as you faded, you know, to black off the air. They made a mistake. They really should have swapped this one out for that. Especially if they weren't going to deliver on the main event. I mean, it's one thing to actually give us a Chris Jericho-Colin Cassidy match, even if it only goes 3 minutes. But they didn't even give us the match. I mean, the main event was Dean Ambrose destroying a jacket. Coming off the heels of him destroying a plant. I mean, what's he going to do next? He's going to set a stapler on fire? If you're an inanimate object, I'd be very concerned about being around Dean Ambrose. But I will say this, though. At least they ended a Raw with Dean Ambrose. Right? Because a lot of people, not just me, are always talking about how we wish they would give Ambrose more of a spotlight on the show, try to elevate him to the top and all that kind of stuff. So how can I complain about the fact that they went off the air with a segment involving Dean Ambrose, who, for a change, was standing tall? How many times have we seen Dean Ambrose laid the fuck out in the middle of the ring by a code breaker? I don't think there was a week that went by during the feud with Brock Lesnar that, you know, Dean Ambrose didn't end up laid out on the mat looking up at the lights. So here's a segment that has him standing tall and they go off the air. You know what? All right. I can live with that. That's cool. I can't complain about that. I just think it fell flat, though, because of the bait and switch.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, Finn Balor made his return for the first time since dropping the NXT title to Samoa Joe. He was interrupted by the Drifter, who sang a song to Balor on his way to the ring. You might call it a ballad. It's a poor joke, I'm sorry. I will say this, the guy got Eva Marie level heat in Full Sail here. This was go-away heat. He was despised by the crowd at Full Sail. Finn was so disgusted, he wouldn't even look at him. He just gave him a Pele kick, and the Drifter bailed. And Balor then picked up the Drifter's guitar and tossed it out of the ring, but the Drifter caught it. He saved the guitar. Maybe the Drifter should feud with Dean Ambrose, so every time Dean Ambrose goes to kill an inanimate object, the Drifter could be there to save it. I mean, we already lost a trombone. I don't know how much more of this instrument violence I can take. Thankfully, the guitar was spared here. American Alpha beat Corey Hollis and John Skyler. The Revival came out to observe later in the match. Didn't get involved. Shockingly, the babyfaces did not get rolled up and pinned like a bunch of losers. They invited Dash and Dawson into the ring after the match, and they chose to walk out instead. Backstage, Shinsuke Nakamura mocked the rage of Alex Riley. He then came out. He went all strong style on Alex Riley in what, as it turns out, was Riley's final WWE match. Riley did get some offense in here. He mocked Nakamura's strong style phrase. It looked like he was really laying it in there on Nakamura, too, because when the match was over, Nakamura had these giant handprints on his chest. Like, his chest was all red from, I guess, the chops from Alex Riley. Of course, Nakamura had no problem reciprocating. He kicked the shit out of Riley before hitting the Kinshasa for the pin. I wish nothing but the best to Alex Riley. Hopefully he'll land on his feet somewhere and get the chance that he never really got here. Austin Aries was in William Regal's office. He was talking to Regal about, you know, something's missing and I'm trying to make an impact here. And I don't want to just be another guy. And Regal was, you know, agreeing with him. All of a sudden, Blake and Murphy walked in without Alexa Bliss. And Aries pointed that out. Where's Alexa? And then I think she showed up. I don't remember. But anyway, the point of all this is that next week, it's going to be Blake and Murphy against Austin Aries and a partner of his choosing. Now, the only thing that worries me, I don't read NXT spoilers, but I'm pretty sure they tape the next couple of weeks of TV. And so if it is Bobby Roode, and God knows I pitched this idea before, that I think this would be the idea to go with, because they really aren't like doing a whole hell of a lot with Aries. Aries is just kind of there. He doesn't have a whole lot of buzz or momentum around him. We know Roode's coming in. It's just a matter of time. Why not reform their tag team? Then I see this segment and I'm like, oh, but then I thought my point was, if Bobby Roode would have made his debut at those tapings, I'm sure we would have heard about that, or I would have heard about it. And I don't recall anybody saying anything about Bobby Roode making an appearance. Doesn't mean he didn't, you know, but I don't know if it's Bobby Roode or not. It would absolutely make sense for it to be him. I hope it's him. I will wait and see. But yes, that was my first thought when I heard that, and Aries got on his phone. He's like, I got a call to make, and he walked off, and I got my fingers crossed. Hopefully we see a Dirty Heels reunion here. Rachel Ellering, the daughter of Paul Ellering, manager of the Legion of Doom, made her NXT debut. Yet another female graduate from Lance Storm School. I was thinking about this when I saw her come out, about all the different people that have come out of Lance's school. There's been a lot of men and women, but I was trying to see, like, we have Emma. Emma was a student of his. Peyton Royce, who they're not really doing much with, but she's in NXT. She came out of Lance Storm School. Taya from AAA and Lucha Underground. She's another graduate. Tyler Breeze is kind of a diva, I guess, so we'll throw him in there. But anyway, Rachel Ellering, only 5 months into her career. Here she is now on NXT. I assume probably not under contract. They bring people in and out that they don't necessarily sign. Doesn't mean she won't be at some point. But she came in here and, you know, she's a very impressive girl. I mean, you know, bronze medalist in powerlifting for Team USA. She's a power lifter, but she couldn't handle little tiny Alexa Bliss here in this match. It's kind of a disconnect there. Bliss won with the sparkle splash. Corey Graves brought up how we've now seen Alexa Bliss run through Tessa Blanchard and Rachel Ellering. So I guess her new gimmick is that she's the second generation killer. Actually, I guess Blanchard would be third generation. She's not the legend killer. She's the legend's daughter killer. Doesn't really roll off the tongue, but that's what she is. That's what she's. Who can debut next week now? What other daughter of a legend is out there wrestling that has not yet made it to WWE who can show up on NXT next week and lose to Alexa Bliss? Somebody come up. I'm sure there's other female performers out there on the circuit right now who are daughters of somewhat important. Somebody float a name by me. Maybe we'll see that person in the next few weeks pop up on NXT. Bayley was being interviewed backstage when Nia Jax interrupted. This led to the announcement that they're going to have a match on next week's show. This was that lame, overly scripted WWE dialogue that just, oh God, makes me cringe. This was just terrible. Main event was Finn Balor over the Drifter with the Bloody Sunday Brainbuster, which is now referred to as 1916, the year of the Irish Uprising, we were told by Tom Phillips. Balor gets on the mic. He demands his rematch against Samoa Joe. That brings out the champion. He is livid. He says Balor should get to the back of the line, to which Finn Balor says, I am the line. William Regal comes out. He announces the rematch between them will take place at TakeOver June 8th. At Full Sail University. Balor ended up doing a dive out of the ring, took out Joe to end the show. So this was fine. You know, it advanced things a little bit. We have a main event now for the next TakeOver special. How might that affect things? Still a lot of talk about Finn Balor maybe coming up to the main roster and hooking up with Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. I mean, those rumors were persistent even before Payback. And I'll say the same thing now I said then. Just because Finn Balor is involved in NXT and challenging for the championship after Extreme Rules does not rule out the possibility that he could debut on the main roster as soon as next weekend. Because we saw this a year ago this month with Kevin Owens, who was the NXT champion when he came to the main roster and he started a feud with John Cena. And he held on to that NXT title for another 2 months, month and a half, 2 months. So there's a precedent for this. It is not out of the realm of possibility that Finn Balor could be on the main roster before he wrestles Samoa Joe on June 8th. So just keep that in mind. And one more thing. The NXT house show in Portland, Oregon last night, they had a Samoa Joe-Finn Balor main event, I believe. After the match, it broke down into chaos. These two were brawling all over the place. And they did something, by the way, that I loved. I just talked about this like only a few weeks ago on the podcast. That one of the things that they used to do, it's a minor thing, but they don't do it anymore. Instead, they do this fucking shaky cam bullshit. Whenever there was like a big brawl or chaos and the referee couldn't contain it, the timekeeper would ring the bell, right? Over and over and over again. They wouldn't stop. I mean, it's not like it's going to stop the wrestlers from killing each other, but it was just, I don't know, it was a cool thing. And they don't do that anymore. Well, they did that here. So I thought that was kind of a nice little callback there. So all the wrestlers poured out of the locker room, even Nakamura. He looked like Nakamura came out there. He was just like one of the very many bodies that came out. I almost feel like, you know, when they do like tribute shows and The Undertaker doesn't show up, like Nakamura should stay in the back when all the other guys come out to break up a fight. But he was out there and they broke it up, and it was actually a pretty cool little deal that they did. And now William Regal is apparently going to be making an announcement on their Facebook page this Tuesday. In light of the chaos that happened last night, he's going to be announcing something with regard to their TakeOver match. I assume some kind of stipulation. Maybe he'll make it, you know, no DQ. I don't know. You know what? I don't recall the last time I ever saw a cage match in NXT. I'm not saying it's never happened, but I don't remember there being one. Maybe it's about time we get ourselves a cage match for a TakeOver main event. That would be different. I wouldn't mind that at all. But I guess we'll find out on Tuesday. Regal will make his announcement on Facebook.
What's up, Sound Off fans? This is Matt Harrigan, and if you know me at all, I'm the obsessed Young Bucks fan who created the massively successful charity fundraiser in their honor called Superkick the Holidays. And that was a fundraiser in which we bought a bunch of Young Bucks gear through your support and gave those materials to the homeless and low income of New York City, which included men, women, and veterans. And with all of your help, we were able to make a substantial difference. So why not build off of that? That's why I'm here today, folks, because it is with my pleasure and honor to announce that the Superkick Foundation exists, and it is the fan-run, official, non-for-profit organization for pro wrestling. We are going to continue to serve the individuals in need, but we are also going to expand ourselves so that we support independent wrestlers who rely heavily on their merchandise sales as a thank you, as a show of gratitude for their contributions to the art and the sport that we all know and love. When we ran the initial Superkick the Holidays campaign, Solid Monster gave us a huge plug, and that proved to be very helpful and successful. So I am honored to drop this news right here on the Sound Off. Now, how can you support us, you ask? Let me be very upfront and clear with you guys, because I'm from the Bronx, I keep it real 100%. We don't want your money right now. Although, we wouldn't say no if you wanted to help us out a little bit, help a brother out a little bit with some of these paperwork fees. But the reason why we don't want your money right now is because we're in what we call the Vince McMahon phase, right? And what that means is that we are dealing with a bunch of annoying paperwork that no one should ever have to deal with. But we're doing it because we believe that our cause is changing lives. So the best ways to support us are just two simple steps. First of all, we want you to follow us right now or after this podcast on Twitter at SuperkickFNDN. So that's at SuperkickFNDN. And number two, just spread the word about us to your friends. Spread the word about it to your families. Hell, if you know a wrestler, if you know a promoter, spread the word to them too. If you didn't know, we do have some wrestlers on board with us. We have Donovan Dijak. We have Blaster McMassive from Shikara, who's one half of the Devastation Corporation. Obviously, we have both Nick and Matt Jackson on our side as supporters. So we're having a bunch of events. We're known for giving away free stuff to our supporters. We just did a fantastic giveaway a couple weeks ago. But it's going to be our fundraising events where we really make a difference. And for those fundraising events, once again, let's keep it on the real. 100% of your contributions, if you choose to donate to us, will be going directly to the cause. No runarounds, no loopholes, no BS. 100% of your contributions are going right to this cause. None of us are making any money off of this, because none of us want to make money off of this. The only thing that we want to make is a difference. So please join us by following us at SuperkickFNDN and be a part of something that's going to be really special. And let's make a difference.
Some TNA notes. So remember when I mentioned that TNA lost its Tuesday replay of Impact on Pop TV in favor of moving it to Saturday morning? Well, now they've lost that too, which means that there is no longer an Impact replay at all. I guess it wasn't doing very well, so the network booted it. And they didn't wait very long either, because, you know, that Saturday replay didn't start all that long ago, and already it's history. So that's not a very encouraging sign. Also not encouraging is the fact that, according to Pro Wrestling Torch, TNA is still behind in paying its production people, at least some of them. And some of them haven't been paid going back to shows that they worked in January. Some of those same people have also been told that come time for the next TV tapings in June, chances are they're probably going to be replaced by independent production workers. I'm sure all while still not getting paid what they're owed. You know what would be poetic justice at this point? If this potential new investor that we've heard about recently, like, or new owner, whatever they end up being, let's say they offered millions to TNA for a stake in the company, maybe even let Dixie keep her 51% that I'm sure she would love to keep. And then instead of actually paying, they just keep delaying and delaying until the company just dies. That would be, I'm not saying I'm advocating for that. I'm just saying that in light of all these stories about late payments and people getting the runaround, that would be a poetic end for TNA. Some Ring of Honor notes. On the TV, I just haven't been able to keep up with the show. I've just been busy with other things, so hopefully I'll get back into the swing of that soon. But there were some big things that happened this past week. I know they had their Global Wars pay-per-view. I got a chance to watch the main event, at least, with Jay Lethal and Colt Cabana, which descended into chaos. I don't even think there was a finish. The Bullet Club ran in. Super kicks for everybody. Super kicks for Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino. And the super kicks even extended to their own father. The Young Bucks super kicked their own dad. What a bunch of little pricks. And speaking, I think it was Nick Jackson, one half of the Young Bucks at the tapings, I think the next night, may have suffered a broken rib. So he could be out for a while. But they added Adam Cole as the newest addition to the Bullet Club. He is now a member of the group. They added, I think it was also one more member, I forgot who, at the tapings the next night. Not as big of a name, but they added, is it Adam Page, I think maybe, is now a member of the Bullet Club. Adam Cole, though, I mean, that was the biggest story. And, you know, I watched the finish, and it was very overbooked. I mean, I think that goes without saying, but they were going for that style. You know, they were going for that angle. They want to just complete and utter chaos, bodies laid out everywhere, security people laid out everywhere, announcers laid out. So I guess in that respect, it worked. It just, I don't know, there was a lot going on. But the Bullet Club lives. And now the Bullet Club, if you think about it, WWE has the club, right? I mean, it's basically the Bullet Club in all but name. So you've got this Bullet Club influence in WWE. You've got the Bullet Club running roughshod in Ring of Honor and in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Even in NXT, Finn Balor's going around doing the Too Sweet sign. He's waiting for the Balor Club to become a thing. So it kind of goes to that mailbag question I got a few weeks ago. It was like a buy or sell on which group had like the bigger influence or something, the Shield or the Bullet Club. And I said the Shield did in terms of their own company, because you look at those three guys and where they are and how they're being relied on to carry the water going forward. But just in terms of overall impact, you can't deny that the Bullet Club has had a bigger influence than anything. And now they've got some form of a Bullet Club presence going on in pretty much every single major promotion. You know, so that's a pretty cool deal. Also, Cedric Alexander announced his departure from Ring of Honor. He tweeted out, 5 years with ROH. In New York City, I say farewell. I'm excited for the next chapter and what it brings. Thank you to ROH and its fans for the support. His name has come up as a possible part of WWE's Cruiserweight Classic, so that could be where he's headed next. Someone actually tweeted me a link to a match. This was probably from like a year and a half ago maybe. It was between Cedric Alexander and ACH at a Preston City wrestling show. They had a no loud noises match. And the fans respected the stip, you know, which is more than I can say for certain promotions. They don't respect their own stipulations. But it was fun to watch. It reminded me a lot of, you know, it's like the first time you watch like the blindfold match between Jake the Snake and Rick Martel, or, you know, you see kind of a unique stipulation. And I know blindfold matches, I'm sure, were happening, you know, in other promotions many, many years before they did it at WrestleMania. I know the world doesn't start and stop with WWF, but that was the first time I ever saw a blindfold match, and it was very unique. This was fun to watch. It was fun to watch. WWE can never pull off something like this for obvious reasons. I mean, it's one thing to ask the crowd to be quiet at a PCW show in front of 250 people, if there were even that many there. I don't know what building they were in, but this was a tiny building. Very different, though, in a building with 10 or 15,000 people. It reminds me of the TakeOver show in Brooklyn last year. I'll never forget this. So they, you know, Triple H wanted to do that unique intro where they would go on the air. He'd be standing there in the middle of the ring with a mic, but all around him would be nothing but darkness, and you wouldn't hear anything. So it almost, either you would think he's in an empty arena, or he's, you don't know where he is, right? But then at the right moment, he would raise his arms up and the lights would come on and everybody would be going nuts, and you would see this sold out crowd of 15,000 people. Well, it didn't quite work out that way. And, you know, we were in the building. They're like seconds away from going on the air. And Triple H is practically begging. I mean, he's all but begging us on the microphone. Okay, we can't do this without you guys. I need you to be quiet. I need you to lower your voices. This is going to be so cool. Please, we need your cooperation. He was all but ready to get down on his hands and knees and just beg us. And it got kind of quiet. Obviously, it was never completely quiet. Still, people were catcalling and stuff, but as they're about to go on the air, like it gets to its quietest point, and in the middle of all of this quietness, you have this one guy who just shouts out, Chris Benoit! And everyone's just like, really, dude? And then from there, people were booing and other people were shouting, you know, you're chanting curse words at him, and it was just a disaster. So I think Triple H did the best he could. I don't remember going back and watching it, how it came off on TV. I'm pretty sure you could probably hear plenty of people in the background. But that just goes to show you, when you have a, when you're a promotion that runs buildings that big, that's the kind of thing you can't do. You can only get away with that if you're like an independent promotion. So it's fun, though. It's fun to see stuff like that. Lucha Underground opened with Dario Cueto meeting with Councilman Lorenzo Lamas in a bar, handed him an envelope with $50,000 inside to pass along to his quote-unquote employer. Lorenzo Lamas informs Dario that the police have an open investigation going into the temple, and it's very likely they already have a mole on the inside. Tells Dario that the temple is very important to his employer, and that his employer will be visiting him very soon. Mr. Cisco, Cortez Castro, Joey Ryan, in a triple threat match for one of the seven ancient Aztec medallions. The match literally went 2 minutes, if that, before Joey Ryan rolled up Castro with a schoolboy for the pin. As if we didn't get enough of those on Monday. Now we need them on this fucking show. So this sucked. I mean, I'm sure it'll be used to probably advance the whole undercover cop thing between Cortez and Joey Ryan, but this just sucked. Katrina is backstage talking to Mil Muertes before his big Grave Consequences match with Matanza later in the show. Yeah, it's funny. I just interviewed Carly Katrina, and I said to her, you know, you have a lot of people wondering who or what Katrina really is. And the very next day, here on this show, we learned that she is 197 years old. So, in fact, she is a witch, or a demon, I guess, take your pick. Best looking 197-year-old I've ever seen, I'll tell you that. You know what they say about older women. They know what they want. What Katrina wants is to lick Matanza's face and make the two of them, that being her and Mil, immortal. As they walk off, we see King Cuerno in the shadows lurking. If you're 197 years old, aren't you already immortal? I mean, is there like a limit to the lifespan of a demon? Is it like 500? It's like 1,000? I would think by the time I get to 500 years old, I'm probably about ready to check out. I don't know how much longer I need to go on. Angelico is still missing, so Johnny Mundo takes his place, teams with Ivelisse and Son of Havoc against the new Trios Tag Team Champions, Prince Puma, Dragon Azteca Jr., and Rey Mysterio Jr. Taya and Ivelisse, they did not get along during this match. Taya was on the outside. 619 by Mysterio. Puma finished Havoc off with the 630 off the top. Fun match. Afterwards, Taya attacked Ivelisse, so I would think that match is coming soon. We've got the Aztec Funeral March here for Graver Consequences. Now, the first Grave Consequences match was one of my favorite matches all year last year. So the bar was pretty high going into this. I liked this. I did like it. It could not come close, though, to that Phoenix Mil Muertes match from Season 1. We have four caskets here, one on each side of the ring. Each one was used as a weapon. They were stacking them side by side. They were powerbombing each other on top of them and chokeslamming each other on top of them, denting the shit out of them in the process. When I asked Katrina if she wanted to wrestle on the show at any point, because we haven't seen her wrestle yet, so when I interviewed her, I asked her, you know, are you interested in wrestling? Do you want to wrestle? And she said yes. She said she was getting antsy, I think, right? She said she was getting restless because she wants to be more physically involved. Well, she got physically involved here. She took a wooden... actually, she broke a wooden chair across Matanza's back. And then later on, she slapped the shit out of Dario Cueto before Matanza whacked her with a chair across the back, knocked her out. Although, according to Vampiro, he killed her with that chair shot. That's what he said. Or that's what he was speculating on commentary. He's like, look, Matt, she's not moving. He got like real somber when Matanza went to pick her up and put her in one of the caskets. He's like, he may have killed her. And then like not 10 seconds later after what after what he said, and then Matanza slams the lid shut, Vampiro just goes, she's buried alive. Dead or alive? Which is it? Either she's dead or she's buried alive. You can't have both. Got to make up your mind. So Matanza hits his reverse power slam on Mil Muertes, but he does it into the casket, which was kind of cool. He shuts the lid, so Matanza wins. He is still the Lucha Underground champion. All of the creepy people who brought the caskets out earlier, they come back out. They carry the coffin with Mil to the back. And King Cuerno reveals himself to be one of the pallbearers. I guess he would be, I guess that's what you would call him, right? A pallbearer. Not a fat white guy. He was just one of the guys carrying out the caskets. The other casket, by the way, where Matanza had put Katrina in, when the lid is opened, I think Dario opened it later on, there was nobody inside the casket. So Katrina doing her Undertaker impression here on this show. And there you go. So, like I said, I enjoyed this. This was not as good as the original Grave Consequences match. I don't know that any match could be. That match, there was a personal grudge between those two guys, and it was just so violent and bloody and vicious, and there was no way this match was going to be able to live up to it. But I have to say, you know, for a guy whose specialty is supposedly this Grave Consequences match, Mil Muertes hasn't fared too well in them. I think he's 0-2 so far. This didn't have the level of brutality that the original one had. That match literally felt like somebody was fighting for his life. Like, you know, like Phoenix barely survived. This was a different kind of match. Show ended with Councilman Lorenzo Lamas getting into a stretch limousine, presumably to meet with his employer. He presents him with the envelope that Dario gave him with the 50 G's inside. We never actually see who this person is. We just see them... Like, the closing shot is this, I say person, who knows if it's a man or a woman, lighting a cigar, I guess. And then they quickly cut away and they go off the air. So, he did refer to the mystery man here, though, Lorenzo Lamas did, as my lord. So, that should tell you right there, we're not dealing with the mayor here. This is someone far more important. I love these segments so much. You know, like the one at the bar at the top of the show. I fucking love that. Like, it's fucking Dario Cueto and Lorenzo Lamas in a bar. Are you fucking kidding me? I could watch an hour of that. The whole show could be nothing but them just, like, having a dialogue in the bar. You know? And, like, I would watch. I would watch that. Like, when I'm watching these segments, I just want them to continue so we could see the story progress. When they cut away, I actually am like, oh man, we gotta watch a fucking wrestling match now. Like, they get me so into it. Which I guess is a credit to them and the way they shoot it and everything. But I think, like, what we need here is a Lucha Underground movie. Even like a mini movie. Just put on YouTube or something. I don't care. At the end of each season. I think at the end of each season there should be some kind of a Lucha Underground movie. No matches. Just like segments like this. Believe me, you can get at least 20 minutes, maybe half an hour out of that. So, just an idea. Just putting it out there. Let's get to the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Alex in Topeka, Kansas. I was wondering what you thought about the idea of WWE bringing in a tag team title for the women's division. I originally thought it was a good idea because pre-Divas Revolution, it seemed like the women were just thrown into random tag matches anyway. They could drop one of the men's singles titles and develop a tag division for the women. I think Emma and Dana Brooke would make a great heel tag team championship duo. I also think Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch could do the whole tag champs hate each other but still win every week angle. What do you think? When I've been asked about that before, about adding more titles, I'm always, like, very negative on it because I just think you could add five more titles. What does it really mean, right? Now everybody gets a belt. I think the fewer the better. You have one world title, which is awesome. I don't miss the second world title at all. Maybe some of the guys on the roster do because, you know, they're not... Yeah, Roman's got that belt. He's not giving it up anytime soon. But you've got the one world title. You've got the two mid-card belts, the tag belts, and the women's belt. Now, the U.S. title actually meant something for a while last year. People were, you know, hanging on every near fall, and it was cool. Like, John Cena gave it some credibility until he got hurt, and he dropped it. And they gave it to Kalisto, and they did nothing with it. So, I'm with you, and I'm all for eliminating one of the mid-card titles, and I'm a WWF guy, so I don't want to get rid of the Intercontinental title. They already made that mistake once before many years ago, and then they brought it back a few months later. I would keep that and get rid of the U.S. title. You know, I know they're all patriotic and stuff. The United States Championship, who gives a fuck? Get rid of it, keep the Intercontinental title, and build a nice little division around that, and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Cesaro and The Miz and Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin, and everybody can shoot for that as their goal. That could be like the little world title of their own little division there. And, you know, I'd be fine with that if they wanted to bring in women's tag team belts. I think they're at a point now with the women's division where they have enough talent on there. And again, eventually Bayley will come up. Asuka, I don't know if they have Asuka earmarked for the main roster. They should. She absolutely belongs there, just like Nakamura belongs in the main roster. And hopefully at some point both of them will get there. So if, let's say, 6 months or a year from now, you've got a women's division that has Asuka, Bayley, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, Natalya. They've still got Alicia Fox, who I like. Alicia Fox used to pop up at NXT a lot, and she was actually pretty good. So just the ones I've mentioned, I'm sure I'm free. Oh, well, Emma, of course, Dana Brooke. You've got a nice division. You've got a nice crop of girls right there. You know what? It probably is time to have a set of tag team belts. I would get rid of the U.S. title and do exactly what you just suggested and bring in a, you know, pair of women's tag team belts and work some storylines around it. So instead of just having the main storyline with Charlotte against whoever, you can have a secondary one, kind of like the one they have now with Emma and Becky Lynch. It's refreshing to see that. They never used to do that. It was all about the Divas title. Okay, well, Nikki Bella is the longest reigning Divas champion, and everything revolved around that, and everything else was just an afterthought. I'm glad we've gotten away from that bullshit, and we have a women's division where they have their own things going on, even beyond just the belt. So why not bring in tag team belts, and you can work some more stories around it. I think that's a good idea. Zach from California. I feel Damian Sandow is a modern-day version of Chris Jericho in WCW. Sandow, like Jericho in the late 90s in WCW, had all the potential in the world, but management did not know what to do with him. We've seen Sandow get over in spite of management not giving him much to work with. In the end, Jericho bailed and went on to be a top guy in WWE. I feel Sandow has the ability to be a top guy in another company like a Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, or a New Japan, but unfortunately will not have the growth in such companies as he likely would if he stayed in WWE and they did something with him. What are your thoughts? Well, let me stop you there. I am as big of a Damian Sandow supporter as anybody, and I was completely bummed out when he got cut. I saw the interview he did in Rolling Stone, very gracious, didn't have a bad word to say about WWE, just the most positive person in the world. And I think that's great. But let's not delude ourselves into thinking that Damian Sandow is going to go and become a top guy in New Japan Pro Wrestling, because that's not going to happen. Nor should it happen. You look at the talent they have in New Japan Pro Wrestling, Damian Sandow does not fit in that mix, I'm sorry. Even in Ring of Honor. I think, you know, if Damian Sandow went to Ring of Honor, he'd probably do well for himself. I don't know, when it comes to like putting Damian Sandow in the ring for 15 minutes or 20 minutes with like a Roderick Strong or a Jay Lethal, how he would do, I don't know. I really don't, because other than maybe the Money in the Bank match with Cena, I don't remember them really ever giving Damian Sandow 15 or 20 minutes of ring time in a singles match. I can't even say he's good or bad because I don't remember them really doing that with him. So could he hang with guys like that in Ring of Honor? I mean, he'd probably hold his own. Even in Ring of Honor, I don't know that I see him as a top guy. I just don't. And I said that last week. I said, look, the issue was never that Damian Sandow wasn't going to beat John Cena and become the champion, or beat Roman Reigns and become the champion. He could have beaten John Cena. You could have given him a win there. They elected not to do so. And they still could have salvaged the guy, even in defeat. He had a great match with Cena. I went back and watched it recently. You know, the people were on the edge of their seat for those near falls, and they really wanted to see him pull out the win. You know, and then boom, you know, the attitude adjustment, 1, 2, 3, it was all over. I can't argue with WWE. If you think about what they went on to do, if my timeline is correct here, and I could be wrong, I think this was before SummerSlam, right? Because Cena had the arm injury that he ended up taking time off for. Because I know Sandow worked on the arm, he hit him in the arm with the briefcase or the shoulder, whatever. So if this was before SummerSlam in 2013, I mean, they gave us John Cena against Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam. That was a match I was really looking forward to. So you can't just take the championship off of Cena and say, well, we're going to do Damian Sandow against Daniel Bryan in the main event of SummerSlam. I could see from their perspective, yeah, that's not going to work. So time-wise, maybe it wasn't the best thing for him, but, you know, he still went out there and had a great match. I think Damian Sandow is very capable. He could go anywhere he wants to and probably do very well for himself. Or he could just work indies and not sign a contract with a major promotion. He can go to TNA. I think that would be a bad move because I think people associate, and rightly so, they associate failure with TNA. You know, TNA is kind of where you go to die. It's just how it is. I mean, they gave life to EC3. True. He's one of the few success stories from TNA in the last 5 years. But all anybody is talking about is that work shoot that, you know, EC3 and Drew Galloway did at the Evolve show. And people were emailing me. They wanted to know my thoughts on that. You know, it was what it was. They're trying to get something going. It's a total angle. It's not like there's a war brewing. WWE, I would like to think that maybe gave Triple H a heads up since these guys were going out there and trashing them. If I'm Gabe Sapolsky, I don't want to do anything to jeopardize my new friendship with NXT. No, it was just an angle. I didn't see it as any more or any less. I thought they went out there. They, you know, maybe I'm just so numb to these fucking shoot angles at this point. Like, it takes a lot to really, like, impress me. I watched it and I said, okay, whatever. They're trying to get something going here. They're working reality into their little angle here. And that's cute. But all people are talking about are EC3 and what he said at the Evolve show. I don't even know what the fuck EC3 is doing on TNA TV. Is he feuding with anybody right now? I don't know. If he is, nobody's talking about it. Drew Galloway's the TNA champion. He was part of that whole thing. More people are talking about that than whatever he's about to do in TNA. I guess he's going to wrestle Bobby Lashley or something. I mean, so my point is, you go to TNA, and if you've got any kind of buzz or anything going on, there's just not a lot of life. There's no pulse. So yeah, maybe Damian Sandow goes to TNA and he's wrestling in main events. Who the fuck cares? Like, does anybody even care? I mean, God bless him. Maybe he'll go there and get a nice big fat paycheck. Maybe he'll get some of the money that the production people still haven't been paid. If it's all about the money, then you know what? Go. You know, go to TNA. Make as much money as you can while you can. Because a year from now, who the hell knows if Damian Sandow is going to be in demand the way he is now. Yeah, I wouldn't begrudge him if he did it. I just think it would be a mistake to go to TNA. He can go almost anywhere else. You know, be a big star and probably do very well. But let's not have these delusions of grandeur. You know, Damian Sandow is going to go be a top star here and he's going to be a top star there. I don't see him that way. I just see him as a guy who's very entertaining, who can go out there and, you know, he could be a featured guy, not necessarily a top guy, and do very well for himself. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, I mean, top guy in New Japan, you know, you might have had some bad sake there. I don't know what you've been drinking. Tella A from Philadelphia. I hope I'm saying that right. So I was listening to episode 437 from a few weeks ago, and you were talking about the Renegade show that I remembered watching as a kid on Channel 9 in New York, and realized the character was named Reno Reigns. Thinking about Roman Reigns and him having no real character, I thought it would be cool if his character was made into more of a renegade-ish character. So figure part Diesel, part American Badass Undertaker riding a motorcycle to the ring, even changing his nickname from The Guy or The Big Dog, which are generic, to The Renegade, Roman Reigns. Do you think this would be a good idea? You mean that The Guy is too generic for you? Like The Family or The Club? I don't believe you. When I first read your email, I seriously thought, I was going along and I'm like, uh-oh, he's going to pitch an idea for Roman Reigns to be revealed as the son of Reno Reigns. And maybe, hey, you know, bring in Lorenzo Lamas to be his father, right? Roman Reigns is revealed as Councilman Delgado's son on Lucha Underground. There's a storyline for you. The problem is this. It doesn't matter what you call him. You could call him, you know, Ravishing Roman Reigns. You can call him Rockstar Roman Reigns. You can call him Ravioli Roman Reigns. He's still getting booed. You know, calling him Renegade Roman Reigns, he'd probably get booed even more. Because what exactly makes him such a renegade? He is the opposite of what a renegade is. You can't take a guy who's getting booed because he's this, you know, he's the so-called establishment choice, right? He's their hand-picked guy, and then expect fans to get behind him as some sort of renegade. Like, it's completely ludicrous. You're not doing him any favors by doing that. And I can see what you're saying. I mean, I think if the reaction to Roman Reigns wasn't what it is, I mean, Renegade Roman Reigns, I mean, it sounds like a cool name in theory, but I just think the end result would be no different than what it is now for him. And if anything, it might actually be worse. Joseph writes in, I remember at one point, Billy Gunn had been given what some thought was going to be a big singles push against The Rock. During their feud, Rock cut a promo on Billy where he said, you got down on your hands and knees. God, my name is Billy, and I just won King of the Ring, and the only problem is everybody thinks that I absolutely suck. Oddly enough, despite beating The Rock in a singles match, I don't remember that. Beating The Rock in a singles match, it did nothing to put Billy Gunn over. Is it possible Rock's promo damaged Billy Gunn's credibility, effectively burying him as a singles competitor? Oh, there's that word again. Well, it certainly didn't help him. I mean, if you talk about how much your opponent sucks, and then come time for the big match, you beat them, it's like, you know, where do you go from there? All right, you suck, pal, and I'm going to beat you, and then you actually go out and beat him. I'd say he's pretty much done at that point. I don't think Rock set out to bury, like, Billy Gunn or anything like that. Maybe somebody in the back did. You know, Rock's just going out there and doing what he has to do, but I would say shoving Billy Gunn's face in some large woman's ass, that's probably more of a burial than anything. A literal burial. He literally buried Billy Gunn's face in the ass crack of an obese female. So, yeah, it was whoever in the back, you know, Vince, whoever, they just gave up on the guy. They gave up on the idea of him as being anything as a single star. Right? He ended up back on the New Age Outlaws, and that's not a bad spot to be in. It's not like Billy Gunn was jobbed out into oblivion after that. He went back to where he belonged. You got to remember, like, all of the talent that they had on the top at that time, they were loaded with stars. If Billy Gunn, at that age that he was back then, with his athletic ability, because he's a hell of an athlete, came along, let's say, in the last, like, 5 years, he may well have become a top star in WWE. Not the top star, because I don't think he's at that level, but he could, you know, he could have gotten a sustained push as a singles guy on the roster. You know, he's a pretty big dude too. He's got to be like 6'4", 6'5". That still means something. That goes a long way. But that was the heart of the Attitude Era, dude. I mean, Billy Gunn on top, it wasn't going to happen. He didn't have to be, you know, in a singles situation to be on top. He already was on top. The New Age Outlaws were more popular back then at their peak than most guys they have on TV today. The New Age Outlaws were main eventers, and they had a lot of main event matches on TV. They were a main event tag team, and you could put them in main events and nobody would bat an eyelash because they felt like they belonged there. Luke from Arizona. I heard Cowboy Bob Orton nearly gave The Undertaker hepatitis C when he got busted open at Armageddon 2005 during the Hell in a Cell match with Randy Orton. Why wasn't Undertaker made aware of this, and why wasn't that problem avoided? Yeah, that's a really fucked up story. So, if I'm remembering all the details correctly here, I think Bob Orton had or has hepatitis C, which is I think it's Hep C, which is a very serious disease, nothing to play around with. I think he may have gotten it when he was a kid. Which, if that's the case, that's even more alarming, because you have to figure that this guy bled a lot at different points, I would imagine, during his career, and he wrestled for a long time. So that's a whole other story. But in 2005, he was part of the storyline with Randy Orton and The Undertaker. I think Bob Orton anyway, I think he bled in that Hell in a Cell match. I think he might have even bled on The Undertaker. The problem is, nobody bothered to tell Undertaker that Bob Orton had hepatitis, which is easily transmissible by blood. I think Orton did tell John Laurinaitis. I think Orton might have been... Now, how Laurinaitis found out, I don't know. My understanding is Laurinaitis knew, and it was either because Bob just went up to him and told him, hey, I have hepatitis, or B, he might have been tested under the wellness policy at the time. But that doesn't make any sense, though, because if there was no wellness policy until 2006. So somehow John Laurinaitis knew that Bob Orton had hepatitis, and he allowed him to go out there and to bleed during the match. And Undertaker had no idea. I'm not even sure if Randy knew. That's even more fucked up because that's his own son. You know, Randy was as much at risk in that match as The Undertaker was of being infected. So when Undertaker found out about it after the match, because believe me, he wouldn't have gotten in there if he knew, somebody tipped him off. When he went in the back, he found out, he was fucking livid. I mean, he blew a gasket. And I think like a month or two later, you know, Bob Orton was released. I'm sure one probably had something to do with the other. Undertaker had every right to be furious. He's lucky he didn't get infected. And if Johnny Ace knew in advance that this guy had hepatitis and he still told him to go out there and bleed, or even if he didn't tell him to bleed, it's a fucking Hell in a Cell match. This is before the PG era, no blood and all that stuff. You know, people bled all the time, and in Hell in a Cell matches, you pretty much had blood in almost every single one of them. So you had to know at least that was going to be a possibility. I mean, I don't know how he didn't get fired. He should have wished himself well in his future endeavors and then walked out the door. If he knew, that's the key, if he knew. And that's my understanding of the story. It's that he knew, and then Undertaker was just left completely in the dark about it. And you could also say, well, why doesn't Orton go up to Undertaker and let him know, hey, listen, you know, I don't know. I get the sense a lot of guys weren't thinking straight in that situation, and they're lucky that it didn't turn out to be a hell of a lot worse than it was. Marco from Seattle, what would you think of a Sin Cara heel turn that has him turn on Kalisto and start doing a dark, evil, masked character? We've seen Hunico as a heel Sin Cara before, but I'm thinking even darker than what they did there. Another thing they could add is have him do less high-flying moves and do a more grounded and aggressive style of wrestling. Do you think this is a good idea, and could this help Sin Cara in his career and possibly make him an upper mid-card wrestler for years to come if WWE were to do it right? No. That's my answer. No. The Sin Cara character, I will say, they've gotten more mileage out of this thing than I ever thought they would. I thought this character would be dead like 2 years ago. And it's, you know, it's Hunico under the mask, and he's a great performer, and he goes out there and found some success with this Lucha Dragons tag team, and they've done very well for themselves. But I think there's a ceiling to that character. And so what you're proposing here, and I know you're only trying to help the guy. First of all, like you said, we've already seen Sin Cara Black, right? Remember Sin Cara Black was the heel? Like, it would be a retread of a storyline they've already done before, number one. And you're saying, like, well, he could be more aggressive. It doesn't matter, more aggressive, less aggressive. All people remember, if they remember it at all, is, oh, Sin Cara is back to being a heel again. It's just a rehash of what they've already done. And also, so one of the few things that the Sin Cara character has going for it is that it's a high flyer. He does these dazzling dives and high-flying moves. What you're proposing here, by turning him, is eliminating most of that and just having him do more mat-based work. That sounds like the most boring thing in the world to me, to have Sin Cara, a guy who should be flying around, do nothing but mat-based work. Like, some heels can get away with that. Like Kevin Owens, for example. I'll use him as a great example. Kevin Owens gets cheered by a lot of people no matter what he does, no matter what he says. One of the things that I like and I appreciate about Kevin Owens, as hard as he tries to be the best prick that he could possibly be on TV, is that he'll do this thing where he'll fake that he's going to go do a dive, right? He'll fake you into thinking he's going to jump over the top rope and dive out onto his opponent. And as he hits the ropes and comes off, he slows down, he just walks to the outside and kicks the guy. And then he looks at the crowd almost like to say, fuck you. Right? That's a heel right there. Because the whole point is, I don't want you to cheer for me. I want you to hate me. I want you to despise me. I'm not going to give you what you want. Screw you. And he's done that before in little spots he does in his matches where he'll end up going for like a chinlock city, right? Not suplex city. And you boo him because it's like, oh man, like, fuck this guy. There's nobody better on the roster right now at that than Kevin Owens. So stuff like that does work. Like, oh, I'm not going to impress you with these high-flying moves. I want you to boo me, not cheer me. So I'm going to put this guy in a chin lock, or I'm going to put this guy in a headlock. Sin Cara is not one of those characters that it would work for. Sin Cara doesn't even speak. He doesn't even... Kevin Owens, he speaks, right? That's one of the best things about him. It's his mouth. Sin Cara doesn't even have that. You put a mask on the guy, you're taking away all of his personality. He doesn't speak. Now he's just in the ring doing fucking chin locks and headlocks. That sounds like death. I don't want to see that. So, look, you know, I see where you're coming from, but I just don't think that would work. I just think that's a probably not a good idea to prolong that guy's career. Greg from North Carolina, I was watching some of the old Raws on the network from 1998, and after Stone Cold won the WWF title at WrestleMania 14, the next night on Raw, Vince handed him the new Attitude Era belt, and it had a blue strap. I'd been watching on and off at the time, and I don't recall this version. How long did it last, and why did they change it? Also, is it just me, or did Rock's Intercontinental title look like it had a purplish strap? Yeah, that Intercontinental title sucked. People called it the Egg, and it was ugly as fuck. So I was very happy that they changed it. I was very happy that Cody brought back the old... Cody, I'll always be a fan of Cody Rhodes, for no other reason, for him pushing to bring back the old design on the Intercontinental title. I'm like a belt snob, so when I saw that, I was all excited. Now we just got to get them to bring the Winged Eagle back. But, and by the way, I have to make a comment about that. There was a fake design floating around a few weeks ago. People were trying to convince other people that they were bringing back the old eagle design of the belt. There was a mock-up of what it looked like with the new WWE logo, and some people fell for it, and some people didn't. I didn't fall for it, because it just looked... Like, why would they even do that? Like, the whole point of them having the belt that they have now is because when they send Roman Reigns out to the Today Show, or the New York Giants win the Super Bowl, what's the first thing they do? They send replica championship belts to the New York Giants. They want that WWE logo front and center. They're not going to change that. If anything, the logo is just going to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Soon, it's not even going to be a belt. It's just going to be a logo that you carry around like a trophy. That's what that will eventually evolve into. But I saw that, and people were like, why do they call it the Winged Eagle? Doesn't that sound redundant? Like, of course eagles have wings. Yeah, well, what if there's an eagle out there that has a broken wing? You ever think about that? What if there's a deformed eagle out there that has no wings? It is possible to have a weagle without a weagle. Oh, my God. Yes, it is possible to have a weagle without wings. I don't even know why I went on that tangent, but I did. So there. Anyway, back to the belts. I'm obsessed with that Winged Eagle. So the blue strap on the belt... that only lasted a few months. Austin came in with it. He held it, I want to say, until July or August, because it was right before... I know when he had the match with Undertaker at SummerSlam that he came out with the Smoking Skull belt. So they got rid of it because Austin wanted to have a Smoking Skull belt, so he, I guess, commissioned one and had it made. I remember hearing that Vince didn't even know about it. He was very upset the first time Austin took it on TV. I don't know if that's true or not, but... The Smoking Skull came in around then, so it lasted whatever it was, 5 months, maybe 6 months max. And I think that belt might have been the same belt that Vince McMahon presented to Arnold Schwarzenegger on SmackDown. When Arnold came on SmackDown, it was about a year later. That was the same night he beat the hell out of Triple H. They presented Arnold with this custom WWF Championship belt. It was the same blue strap, so I wonder if they just took that belt and gave it to him. And lastly here, Yaya from Harlem, New York, buy or sell on who played heel and babyface better and who was the better verbally and in the ring, Chris Jericho or Kurt Angle? That's a tougher one, at least, than the one I got a few weeks ago where the person wanted to know who, you know, which run for Kurt Angle will he, like, most be remembered for or was the best? Was it WWE or TNA? And I couldn't believe that. But this... I'm still going to say Kurt Angle. I'm going to buy on Kurt Angle. I'm going to sell on Chris Jericho. But this one's a little bit tougher. Jericho on the mic, very entertaining, very funny, even as a heel. I love that heel run in 08, like 08, 09. I thought that was him maybe at his best, in all honesty. I enjoyed that Chris Jericho more than I ever did. Chris Jericho, like in those, I'd say like the first 2-3 years in WWE, you know, I like Jericho, but, you know, I don't know. The whole babyface thing got a little long in the tooth with him for me. So, Kurt Angle, though, I mean, Kurt Angle could deliver in every possible way. I mean, the guy could be funny. The guy could be serious. The guy could wrestle. The guy could just do anything you asked him to do better than anybody else. So if you said to me, a Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho match, right? How would that match be? I'm sure it would be great. I know they had a few matches early in Kurt's career. I don't remember them having any matches later on. But I guess Jericho left and he wasn't there for the end of Kurt's career in WWE, and Kurt never did come back. So they didn't have a chance to really work together. It'd be interesting if Kurt Angle did come back to WWE now and Jericho's around, if they wanted to work together. I would be very curious what kind of match in 2016 Kurt Angle and Chris Jericho could have. They probably would still have a better match than most guys, but when I look at the total package here, Jericho was awesome. Kurt was just so far, I think, ahead of everyone else, and even a step or two ahead of Jericho. I can't sell. How could I sell on the guy? You know, he's one of the best of all time. So, in terms of everything you just mentioned, verbally and in the ring, heel and face, right? You mentioned heel and face. I might actually give the slight edge to Jericho on the heel thing, only because, like I said, that heel run in 08, I was a huge fan of that, but it's not enough to make a difference. And it wasn't like he was that much of a better heel. They were both very good. Whatever you gave them, you wanted them to be beloved, you wanted them to be hated. They both went out there and they did the best they could with it, and I think Kurt Angle is going to stand out as one of the best of all time when all is said and done. I'm a huge Kurt Angle fan. So I'm going to buy on him and I'm going to sell on Jericho. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please follow me on Twitter, @solomonster. I will be live tweeting, as always, during Raw on Monday night. We'll get the Raw poll up when the show is over. You can vote thumbs up, thumbs down, no thumbs in the middle. And you could always leave some love for the show in iTunes and Stitcher. Spread the word. Let other people know about the show. Keep checking out the videos on TV Tracks. I want to thank him, as always, for his support. You for yours. Have yourselves a great week. Be well. Stay safe. We'll be back next weekend. That'll be the Extreme Rules episode. So we'll have predictions next weekend and a whole lot more. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. That's racist.
Well, no, it's... I'm just
racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, those are the racists.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.